This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
We want to hear what you're doing. If you're listening to us on Joy 94.9, what are you doing to have a trip around the world in 80 minutes? Tell us about your weekend. SMS us 0427 Joy 949 or email us on air at joy.org.au. Now, you can probably tell I am joyless. I am not joyless, but I am joyless. And my fearless colleague or partner in crime, as some would call it, is currently in Vietnam. She is having a wonderful time, apart from the fact that she is now tied down to a chair so she doesn't get blown off the face of the earth. So far, she's been up to Sapa in the north of Vietnam, near the Chinese border, staying in a gorgeous hotel that looks like a Swiss chalet. She sent a photo. It was unbelievable. Open fires, the whole thing. And then she's been to Hanoi, checking out the French colonial architecture. She's met with a Melburnian who has spent years, up to a dozen years, living in Hanoi, who has an incredible food blog called streetfoodtourshanoi.blogspot.com. So if you're ever going to Hanoi and you want to take a bit of food tour from a fellow Melburnian, that's your guy. Mark Lowison. Jo's also stayed at the beautiful Hotel Metropole in Hanoi, and now she is at the Nam Hai in the direct line of the typhoon that's going through Asia at the moment. So we want to hear if you have been to Vietnam and if you have been to any of those places from Hanoi or Saigon or any of the coastal areas or anywhere in Vietnam. SMS us in 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au. We'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Philippines is going through a bit of a tough time at the moment. I recall very fondly a conversation I was having with some Filipino friends, and one of the people at the table said, why is the Philippines so poor? The people are so industrious and it's so fertile. It doesn't make sense that a country should be so poor and always have these disasters. And my Filipino friend turned around and said, we're poor because we have the disasters. It is a country that is beautiful. If you've been to the Philippines, you'll know the amazing generosity and kindness and warmth of the people. They are the most sing-songy, happy, incredible people to be around. And it's a country that's so frequently beset by natural disasters, which is a shame. It's thousands of islands. It's actually one fewer in high tide than it is in low tide. It's a great country with great people. And the storms that are happening now are heartbreaking, knowing that some of those people are going to lose their lives, their incomes, their family members, their friends, their villages and so forth. So if we can all spare a thought for the people of the Philippines and elsewhere in Asia while these storms are wrecking the joint, and it's a horrible shame, but our thoughts are with them. Today, our guest is someone who we recently had on who is at the start point of a trajectory into fame. Our guest today is Roger Ungers. I got that wrong again, didn't I?
Yeah, Roger Ungers.
Ungers with an S.
Yeah, no worries. That's fine.
You may recall we had Roger on about 3 or 4 months ago. Roger was talking to us about his works. He travels and auto-creates or self-creates a travelogue with video and commentary, which he then edits himself and then has been posting onto YouTube. Roger, what's happened in the last few weeks?
The last couple of weeks have actually been really exciting because the show did start off online. So it was actually on Vimeo. So it was a Vimeo video.
And there were several. Sorry, I corrected, yes.
Yeah, no worries. And yeah, then it later made it to Channel 31, and now we've just recently, last week, had it on SBS 1 as well. So it's been very exciting.
Right, free to air.
Yep,
National broadcaster.
And
so
it's
that's fantastic.
It's just been such an exciting time, and you know, seeing the show grow from, you know, it's basically come from nothing and now it's become something. So it's really exciting. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that must give you a whole lot of encouragement to keep going.
Oh, absolutely. Like it all kind of stems from my passion for travel. And if I can do this and earn a bit of money, then, you know, that's the excellent, you know, best job in the world.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
Your original foray into this. Tell us, take us right back to the beginning.
Sure.
Because it's quite an interesting thing that I don't think people would expect to go together.
Yeah.
How'd you start?
Okay, well, I had actually been working in finance for before I actually travelled, and travel was something that I always wanted to do, and I'd never been overseas before. So I had saved all this money from working, and I kind of thought, well, you know, what's the next step? I don't really like my job. What I'll do is I'll quit, and then I'll travel overseas with this money that I've had. And, you know, I was kind of a bit of a late bloomer in that regard, but I decided I'm going to go away for 2 months to Europe and just see where it takes me, see what this travel thing's about.
You didn't go on leave without pay, you quit.
Yeah, I
so you're really rolling the dice here.
Yeah, really rolling. It was time for a change, you know.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah,
fair enough.
So I needed to change things up. And, yeah, went overseas for 2 months and travelled around about, you know, 10 countries. And, you know, it was just the most eye-opening thing I'd probably ever done in my life. Probably one of the best things I've done in my life so far.
What was your first impression in your first country after getting out of Australia, treading out of the airport? Well, not first, because it's airports and they're pretty generic, but yeah. What was your first impression in the first country? What struck you?
Okay, so first country, I'd transited through Dubai and then arrived in London. So by that stage, I was exhausted. It was a really, really long flight. So that that kind of took me back. So my first impressions were a little bit hazy. But you know, arriving in London and then taking the taxi to my hotel was, yeah, it was completely different.
Did you take a classic London black cab?
I did, yeah, I did. I had to.
What a great experience.
Oh, it's amazing. Like, you only see this stuff on TV, and then to actually be in one of those cabs and to actually be, you know, going through London and seeing all the different types of house fronts. Like, their houses are all kind of very uniform and very, very similar. And to me, that kind of really struck me, and, you know, the traffic, and it was just amazing, yeah.
It is quite striking when you hit London for the first time and realise how much the war has scarred and pockmarked the city, and how many uniform housing projects were put up in the 40s, 50s, and even into the 60s.
Yeah, right.
Just because it was bombed, and they're quite serviceable, and it's a shame because so much architecture was lost.
Yeah, absolutely. It's yeah, it was very different, very different.
What struck you? Was it the air? Was it the light? Was it the people? Was it because you're driving on the same side of the road in the UK, so that's not a problem.
Yes.
Because quite often the first thing that strikes you is a car.
Yes, yeah. Well, it's funny you should mention the air, because I actually found we actually have very clean air here in Australia. And I remember walking out of the airport and just breathing in the air. It was really sort of thick and very sooty. It almost felt very sooty, you know. And I thought, okay, this is interesting.
In London?
Yeah, in London.
Yeah, a lot of diesel engines, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of diesel, and the light actually feels different as well, as you mentioned. It's a lot softer, I found. Like, we have quite harsh sun, and we're known for our harsh sun here and there. It's just a little bit softer, and, you know, just those kind of little things that you pick up on.
What season was it?
I went around January, February, so... Yeah, it was quite cool. Yeah.
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 Okay, so you get in your taxi. Where do you go?
I actually had a really great taxi driver. So as soon as I got there, I wanted to sort of ask as many people about London, where's the best places to go, that kind of thing. And I thought, you know, I'm in here with a taxi driver. He'll know a few things. And, you know, luckily he was able to take me, you know, past Buckingham Palace and past Big Ben and also the London Eye. So I got to see all of this on my first trip through.
So it's a bit
London.
Of a tour through.
It was almost like a tour, yeah. And he's like, you know, there's Big Ben, there's the London Eye, you know, have a look, there it is. And I was taken back, you know, from seeing it on telly and to actually seeing it in real life was amazing. So, yeah, obviously the first stop was my hotel, and I literally just crashed after that. I was so tired.
At this stage, had you planned to turn this into a video log or a vlog or anything? Had the seed already been planted, or was this something that evolved during your first trip?
This is something that actually evolved because my background is in cinematography and photography.
Ah.
And I'm, you know, really into landscape photography in particular.
Okay, let's take a step back. You work in finance, you were saying before.
I did,
yes. Your job, which sounds like now that I know that you have studied cinema,
yes,
must have been a great thing to experience leaving the world of finance.
Absolutely, yeah. I studied film and TV when I got out of high school, and then I'd actually been working in the industry, you know, filming for different documentaries and different film projects from there on in. Mm-hmm. So I always had that background, but it wasn't sort of very financially secure for me. So I kind of opted for the finance job in order to get that full-time income and that sort
Fair
of,
enough.
You know, to, 'cause it is quite hard to be out there, especially as a sole trader, as a cameraman.
Yeah.
It was something for me to make money, but,
What's the competition like?
The competition?
Yeah.
It is quite competitive. I find that a lot of cinematographers that are working in the industry quite frequently are actually people who have had experience for about 20 years or so. So it's very hard for the newcomers to come in because, you know, they know the producers and they know all of the executive producers and they have those connections and they're
always... Are they connections or real relationships?
I'd probably say they are, real relationships, you
know.
Yeah, I think that's probably the hardest thing to break and you need to... You know, it's not what you know, it's who you know, I guess, as the saying goes. Yeah.
Absolutely. We've got Roger
Unger.
Unger. Is it German?
Yeah. It's actually Latvian.
Latvian.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I look at that, and it's also a name in German, so Unger to me, I see it that way, but it's certainly not with double O in English. Anywho, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about being overseas, which is a self-produced, self-filmed, self-written, self-edited series of travelogues
that
you undertook. So let's go right back to the beginning. We were in London. You've had them on Vimeo. You've also had them on YouTube and then recently on SBS.
Yes,
so
right.
You first got the idea, being a cinema photographer, coming from that background, quitting your finance job, getting overseas.
Yep.
Did you start off, because this is the question we didn't get to before, we got distracted. Did you start off thinking this is what I'm going to do, or did it just appear?
It for me, because I'm so in love with photography and cinematography, it was almost like I couldn't help myself. So I went over there. I'd never initially thought I'm going to film my holiday and turn it into a TV show. It was kind of born out of my love for photography. So, and you know, consequently travel as well. So having travelled through my camera, my digital SLR actually takes video as well. So I decided, I'd like to take a few video snaps here and there. And, you know, maybe when I get back, I can put it together with a bit of music or something, you know, just as a little bit of a documentation, have a bit of moving images going to sort of, you know, to make the, you know, instead of having the photos, you'd have the video as well, which would be a nice little thing. So that's kind of where the whole kind of concept came from. But it was just an organic thing.
But
yeah.
Even then, had you thought, I want to broadcast this? Or were you thinking, I'm going to make this into a project, like a lot of people do with their Apple products and have great intentions but never do anything about it? What separates you is you did do something about
it. Yes, yes. I was halfway through my travel and I'd realised that I'd taken all of this footage and I kind of thought, look, I need to sort of include myself in this somehow. And, you know, I kind of started doing those talking to camera little bits that you see through the show. So it kind of evolved and I kind of started thinking about it a lot more and I thought, okay, I'll put this together and I'll show it to my friends and, you know, people I've come across. I took a bit of footage of them as well. And this is something that I could put on the internet and they could have a look and then, you know, they could reflect and remember and what a great time we had. It wasn't until the edit that I kind of decided, oh, maybe I'll put in a bit of information about this place and let it be a little bit more informed about the actual location that I'm at. And, yeah, it just kind of catapulted from there,
Not unprepared, but unscripted. It wasn't drafted in the context of going to the general public.
No, right. No.
So did you lose a lot of great footage because it was too private?
No. I most of the footage I've used is I've probably used about 99% to 89% of my footage because, you know, I've taken these shots. I'm like, I really want that one in there and I really want that one in there. And, Yeah, and, you know, sometimes I would have written the voiceover and, you know, I didn't sort of have enough images in order to fill out that voiceover. So I kind of wanted to prolong those images so that, you know, you could see and what I was talking about. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, so you were travelling with friends?
I initially arrived in London by myself. And I had a friend of mine who was actually travelling in Asia beforehand. Mm-hmm. And she met me in London a couple of days after I was there. And then we went to Dublin together, and we also did a big bus trip through Europe as well. But, yeah, there was parts where I was by myself and times when I was travelling with people.
Okay, so how do you sort of bridge that gap between doing something wholly personal and just for private consumption and then something for broadcast? Have you got people on that you had to then go and chase around the world to get their release? Or could you get away with that? Because the legalities of doing everything on your own and then changing the context must have been a complicating factor.
Yeah, yeah, because it, you know, in the tail end of it now, the fact that it has made it to SBS, I did have to sort of worry about that legal stuff as well. And yes, I did have to contact people that I had been overseas with and, you know, say, look, is it okay? Are you able to sort of, you know, make sure this is all fine and PC? So I did get some releases signed and have to chase a few things up like that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So did you have any assistance with that? Did SBS come and support you, or are you like a supplier, a production company supplies them with footage and they just air it? How does that work?
Yep. So what happened is because the show was sort of starting to grow, I had a friend that that still produces that I'd worked with before. So I was kind of asking her advice. It's like, what should I do? And she said, you need to speak to a lawyer. So she put me onto a really great lawyer.
I'll give her a shout out.
Yeah. Her name is Kylie Bryant.
Thank you, Kylie Bryant.
Yeah, yeah. No, she's very good. So I got onto this lawyer and he sort of took me through the whole legal process and said, this is what you need to get clearance on. And he kind of really, in fact, took a lot of weight off my shoulders in regards to some sort of filming things that I've done. So he was able to sort of get me all PC, so to speak. Yeah.
Because that must be the frightening thing, is not knowing things.
Yeah, that's right.
So, and doing it on your own, you're highly self-reliant.
Yeah.
And it's all on you, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, all roads kind of end here. I'm the one that's in charge and I put myself in that position. So.
All roads lead to Roger.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Okay, so you've gone through an incredible learning arc.
Yes, I have. Yeah.
So you're in London, you're starting to film stuff and blah, 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 and all of a sudden it's turning into something else.
Yes, yes.
So what were the big milestones in your learning arc? What were you learning on the fly?
See, the filming part of it was all kind of, that was the organic part. It was all kind of towards the editing and that I started to sort of learn and see what works and what doesn't work. And, you know, but when I initially had edited the show together, you know, I had shown it to my friends and my friends got to see it and they really loved it. And they were actually the ones that were pushing me to send it somewhere, you know, send it to a TV station or a producer. It's like, you need to send this through, you need to send this through. So in that regard, it was kind of them going, we want you to succeed and we want this to go somewhere because we think it's worthy of it. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Mm. Interesting. Yeah. So you go through that and then you start editing and then you must look at it at a very different, in a very different context with a very critical eye and saying, oh, is that something that the general public wants to see?
Yeah.
If I was a punter watching this, is that of interest to me or is that something that I've thrown in for my friend's sake?
Yeah.
So did you re-edit?
It's all pretty pretty much the same as when I initially edited it. The videos were about 10 to 15 minutes long initially The reason why I did that is because I thought, you know, no one's going to sit down for half an hour in front of their computer and watch, you know, an episode of basically
Very surprised what people do in front of their computers for many hours at a time.
Yeah, no, this is true. So, it started off as the 10, 15-minute episodes and then they had to be put together in order to fill out the half hour for the TV show because I don't do 15-minute time slots.
No.
Yeah, so it's kind of been chunked together in that regard. And then when I went to Japan and did the two videos on Japan, I was consciously thinking these have to be half an hour.
Right, so then you evolved in subsequent shows.
Yeah.
And so you learned about scripting, I guess, or is this something that you'd already done well at university and this is a skill that you already had?
In terms of writing the voiceovers, I really do enjoy doing the research. So I really do enjoy researching on places that I've been. And I actually learnt a lot more about the places when I got back than I did when I was there, which was really interesting. And yeah, it's kind of the way that I wanted the voiceover to be is natural. I didn't want it to sound like it was, you know, been over, you know, a copywriter had gone over it and corrected everything. It was a natural, this is my personal expectation of what it was. This is what I saw. And a few sort of interesting facts to throw in there in a natural kind of way. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Very interesting. Hold that thought. I've got a few more questions to ask you after a few words from our beautiful sponsors. During Naina's warble, we had a SMS from Tamara of Elwood. And Tamara wants to know what was the most challenging thing about filming yourself as you're going along. And if you've got other questions for Roger, let us know. SMS 0427 joy 949 or email us on air at joy.org.au. We'd love to hear from you. Tamara from Elwood wants to know.
The most
so let's tell Tamara from Elwood.
Okay. All right. Well, most challenging thing. See, I'm quite natural with the camera. I'm happy to stand in front and take photos and do that thing. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, so I guess in terms of challenges is probably maybe getting that angle, you know, sort of making sure that you're getting a really good shot and that you would have something that you really like. And also sort of busy, crowded areas are also a bit of a challenge as well, you know, especially when you're trying to get a really nice image. It's very hard to sort of wane through the crowds and that sort of thing.
Oh, of course, because you don't have anyone shepherding people away.
No. It's all... I just look like a tourist like everyone else, so I don't stand out at all.
Do you look somewhat unhinged talking away to yourself there?
Yeah, no, look, actually, that's another challenge as well. when I was filming, doing kind of like the selfie, I suppose, me talking to camera, I'd try to make sure that I was in a spot that was quiet so I didn't look too silly while I was doing it. Yeah, because that's a bit sort of, you know, some guy talking to his camera doesn't really look very, looks a little bit crazy, alarm bells going off kind of thing. Yeah. But
I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. So what are the skills you learned? So you have these challenges. There are some things, I guess, you're still yet to really master.
Yeah.
What were the things you're really proud of in getting this all done? Obviously, negotiation skills with SBS. Tick that off the bucket list.
Yeah. Sorry. What was the question again?
What skills have you learned? What are you proud of? And then talk about what are the things that you're not quite there yet. What do you want to achieve?
Sure. The skills I've learnt, I guess, sort of being able to film on the fly.
Mm. What's so difficult about that? Tripping over?
I love the travel experience. So for me, it's kind of like a balance between filming and experiencing something. So I can sometimes get carried away with, you know, I'm just going to get all of these shots, but not really sort of sitting there and soaking it in and going, I don't want to be anywhere else in the world apart from here because it's so magnificent that I'm standing in front of, you know, the Eiffel Tower or and all of that. So I guess sort of being able to have that balance is something that I, you know, I'm trying to sort of work on and, you know, making sure that I have a really good show but also, you know, enjoying the travel experience as well. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what would you consider the golden rules of filming when you're travelling, not just from your perspective, but from the listener's perspective when they're travelling? What, whether it be composition or whether it be what you said, is really enjoying the moment more so than taking it away?
Yeah. In terms of photography?
Yeah. Filming, video and still?
Golden rules. I always take a photo when I know that it's going to be a good photo, so don't take photos for the sake of taking them. Some people can take, you know, maybe 50 shots of the Eiffel Tower and, you know, there's only two of them that are really that good. You know, kind of think about what you're taking the photo with. And also there's I'm not too sure whether you're familiar with, there's the rule of thirds. Mm-hmm. So in terms of composition, making sure that, you know, you keep your horizons on the top third or the bottom third of the frame and sort of making sure that your composition's really good. I think that will give you really good shots. And don't forget to take photos of yourself too. You know, get someone to take a photo of you. Hopefully somewhere not too dodgy. It will still be a camera. But yeah, so just making sure that you kind of include yourself in this whole sort of travel experience and not just have photos of different locations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see that. Now, when you're filming in different countries around the world, some countries are far more sensitive, or some cultures are far more sensitive about what goes on film and what's perceived as taken from someone when a photo is taken. It's not just their image, it's also to a degree their dignity or something far more spiritual and beliefs. Did you have any challenges with understanding that or going through that? Did you have any miscellaneous women just randomly wandering in front of you protecting a goat or something?
No. I actually was quite lucky in that I didn't sort of have any conflict in that regard, that when I was filming, because, you know, like I said before, I look like a tourist and I'm in really touristy areas. So, of course, everyone's got their camera out and everyone's taking photos, and I'm sort of in an environment where it's rich in you know, the tourism trade. So it's quite the norm. I haven't sort of really gone too out of you know, where the tourists like to go, because those are the things that I usually like to see.
Okay.
So I haven't really had that many issues, to be honest.
Do you see that being an issue coming up in the future?
Look, absolutely. It is,
because you're doing more and different stuff. Let's talk about that. What are you doing next?
Next for the show, so moving forward, I am hoping to do some more episodes.
Will these be funded by the SBS, or have you got any kind of arrangement? What are you doing?
So what I've, at the moment, I'm kind of, we're kind of a little bit in the negotiation stage. So we do want to have some more episodes on SBS. We're hoping to get about maybe 10 to 12 episodes if possible, which is a bit ambitious. But, you know, through sponsorship, you know, I'm also working closely with a production company who is also interested in the program as well. So, you know, having them on board is definitely going to be a driving force and getting that funding and actually getting those other episodes made.
Okay. Yeah. So now actually Marisa from St Kilda just SMS'd in. She wants to know, how did you get SBS to broadcast you? What was the process?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting story, because I was studying tourism at the time, and, so in my class, I'd met quite a few people who were obviously into travel, and there was this one person who, you know, I'd shown the show to, said, "Oh, you know, this is my show," and she said, "Well, I actually know someone at SBS who might be interested in this," and I thought, okay, here we go, someone else pushing it further, and you know, I kind of thought, oh, look, it's not going to make it to SBS. This is never going to happen. So I kind of just said, oh, okay, well, look, I'll just send an email, and this is the link to the video, and they can have a look at it and see what they think. And lo and behold, I get a message back from SBS saying that we've got a time slot at 6 o'clock. You know, would you be interested in us, you know, buying the licensing rights to this and airing on SBS?
You must have been thrilled with saying the word buy.
It was amazing. Yeah, I was over the moon. I couldn't believe it. Like, as soon as I saw that email, I was just jumping up and down, and I was just a crazy person.
I bet.
Was so happy, yeah. And I'd never thought that this would happen, you know, because it was so unexpected.
Does that mean then they own the copyright, or do they own the rights to broadcast? How do you negotiate these things, and what are the pitfalls? Because I'm sure this is outside of your general experiences.
Yes, it is. It's all been a very big learning process for me. What they do is they buy the licensing airing rights. So they'll be able to air the program over a certain period of time, and they'll be able to broadcast it this many times. So that's kind of like the agreement. And they usually set the terms. So they say, we want it for 2 years or 3 years, and we want to air it 5 times in those 2 to 3 years. And this is how much it's going to be. So,
I wasn't in any... They've got the power position in this negotiation.
Of course, yeah.
Were you happy? You don't say what the numbers were. That's none of our business. But were you happy with...
I was very happy. Yeah, I was very happy. I mean, the show... It wasn't meant to make money. It never was designed to do that. But all of a sudden, it's kind of, you know,
grown.
Become this thing. And it's just, you know, every time it surprises me, I'm always surprised with the next steps and what's happening and, you know, the great news. So I've been so lucky, so lucky.
So going back to where we were before we had Marisa's question. So now that you've aired, that must have changed the world in terms of how you are perceived by people and what you can do next.
Yeah.
So the next opportunity is you're working with a production company.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, yeah. So what's coming up?
In terms of the show?
Yeah.
You know, like I said before, we're going to try and get that money behind us in order for the show to be continued to be made, along with the support of the production company here. Yeah.
So you've got now people who do this for a living. So they've got the relationships, they've got the know-how, they've got
yes.
the ideas of where they can source funding
yes.
from.
Yep.
And so you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, look, they have the connections, but obviously this is still something that I've created. So I still do have a bit of a say in it.
That's great. You've got other people helping.
Yeah, yeah. So, where we go to next, they'll probably have a much better idea than me who would be the right people to approach in order for funding for the program than I would. And plus having them on board, if I was to go to, like a website like Webjet or something and try and get money from them as an individual, I don't think that would have as much effect as this production company that's made all of these TV shows and is quite well known in the industry. You know,
the relationships.
Them. Yeah, yeah. And, they'll be able to say, well, we've done really well in our business and we've done this, this and this, and we really like this show and we really want to push it forward. So what do you reckon? Cards are on the table.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So that then gives you the freedom to do different things, I'm imagining, because you talk about a different level of funding. It's not self-funded. It's not just a self-generated thing on a shoestring.
Yeah.
Does that then allow you to really open up your plans, or is the spirit of it still Roger going around with a camera on his own?
Look, the concept's still going to be very much the same, only there'll be a little bit more thought in it with the next episodes. I plan to sort of take it to another level. And I've also, from having done the Europe season and also the Japan season, I've seen an improvement in the Japan ones, and I have more things that I want to improve on. So, ideally I would like to take someone over with me to sort of handle all of the production-y sort of stuff, the accounts and all of that sort of thing. But it's still kind of going to be me travelling around with a camera, what I have experienced and
So maybe better airlines, better hotel sort of...
Not necessarily. It really depends on how much someone's willing to put into the show. So
going backwards.
Yeah.
Will you tip in a bit then of your own money?
Possibly. Look, it depends on where it goes. Like this, I may not get the funding. So that's one other option I have to kind of keep in the back of my head. So it's still sort of open, and I am still going to make the show, even if it is off my own back, but it's looking very promising in order to get that funding at the moment.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Now, going on air with SBS takes you from Vimeo, which is probably, much closer, a friend of a friend of a friend,
yes.
viral.
Yep.
And takes you into, you put your head above the parapet.
Yeah.
How were you received? I know that coming on Joy is a very different thing for a lot of us, because all of a sudden we're talking to anybody who tunes into us in the city. We have no control.
Yeah.
And that gives us a wide range of people that are listening to us
yeah.
with a wide range of perceptions, and how they hear our messages, how they decode and encode
Absolutely.
Back to us is quite varied and yeah. sometimes very positive and sometimes quite challenging to hear.
Yeah.
Were you surprised with overwhelming positivity? Were there strange things that were said to you that were like, I don't think you're watching the same show because that's not what I was about?
Yes,
what was it like going national?
Yes. Look, you obviously, when you do sort of go to a national broadcaster, you're sort of out there for everyone to see and to hear. And
and a popular time slot as well.
Six. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's before the news report. So, obviously you get the people who watch the news watching it. But yeah, the feedback was quite varied. It was 99% positive. So, it was very well received by the general public, and they really did enjoy it. And, I had people asking me, what's the best way to get to Latvia? I saw that bit where you're in Latvia and, wanting to sort of ask questions and find out and, where can I get a copy of this kind of thing. But yeah, and that, those are things I hadn't thought about. But there was also the negative feedback as well. So, people who probably expected more of the program and weren't really taking it for what it is. Because SBS is a lot of their programming is kind of based on, looking deeply into certain subjects like... the ancient hieroglyphics of Egypt and really sort of nutting out and being really intelligent and really sort of discovering that, whereas this, my show, is more about the travel experience. It's
from
about
an individual perspective.
It's a real person going on a real holiday and just kind of trying to share what I've done with everyone, and you know, hopefully they enjoy what they see and hopefully they get something out of it. If they don't get anything out of it, that's fine. Perhaps you've enjoyed watching the images and seeing the places I've been. So
did you find that confronting?
It was very confronting. I remember when the first episode went out on the Monday, and I sort of, you know, within half an hour, I had a few comments which were, you know, a bit distasteful and very unproductive. So I really appreciate productive criticism, something that I can sort of, you know, constructive criticism, so something so that I can learn from. And, you know, I'm really interested to see what people think, because, you know, this kind of helps me shape and helps me grow and helps me become better at what I do. Whereas some of the comments were just like, you know, this is so amateurish, and this is, you know, we don't like this, and, you know, this is silly what you're saying, kind of thing. But, you know, it's an individual.
The premise of it, that yes, it is amateurish, that you're doing it on your own.
Yeah, absolutely.
On a camera.
Absolutely.
So they've actually identified accurately what you're putting forward, but they're turning it around and saying, well, I
don't like
you to
this.
Be different.
Yeah, yeah. We want you to be more like a BBC production. And, you know, I think
isn't
in this...
funny?
It is so funny. And I also think in this day and age, like, a lot of people are so accustomed to YouTube and Vimeo and those style and watching programs like that. And, you know, for it to be on TV, I think it's a great thing, you know, not to have that huge production, you know, values.
Yeah, those corporatized production values all the time.
Yeah, yeah, something different. It's kind of a bit more raw and it's a bit more real, and, you know, it's not so structured, and it's, you know, more organic. And I think that's a great thing, you know. I think that's...
You know what the great thing was? 99% turned around and said, well done. And we think it's well done. That's why we were so thrilled when you could come back and join us on the show.
Yeah.
We're going to talk a little bit more about those matters just after a few beautiful words from our beautiful sponsors. Roger. Talk to me about your future. So you talked about how we got to where we are.
Yes.
And you've been on SBS. You had great ratings and stuff and great success. And are there any more screenings to go?
The show should air. Our license with SBS allows them to air it again. So it will be on SBS again.
But for this current... run, it's gone.
Has gone. But if you did want to actually watch the program, if you missed it, you can actually go onto the SBS website and you can actually look up Being Overseas. Just search for that and you'll be able to find the episodes there. And they're only open for 14 days. So you've got till next week in order to see the episodes if you do wish to have a look at them.
I'll pop that on EscapePod at Joy94.9 on our Facebook page. Straight after the show. So if you want to go and have a look, you can click on it. And I guess you've also got your Facebook page still running?
Yes, I do. So the Facebook page, you know, www.facebook.com/beingoverseas.
Yeah. Okay, we'll pop that on the Escape Pod. So if you haven't joined us on Facebook so far, just go to Facebook and look for Escape Pod on Joy 94.9. There are two. We've got a group, which we're closing down soon because we've got a page, which is much better for everybody, apparently. I don't know why, but we're now very .com/ here. So you are working with a production company. That's all very exciting.
Yeah.
But you can't talk because it's not finalised. So you really can't talk about...
It's still all up in the air at the moment. So, yeah.
So where do you see, in general, people travelling? Because your iPhone or your other device, you know, not being a brand favourite or whatever, you can film things so easily. It comes out in high def.
Yeah.
Incredible technology at our fingertips. So with a laptop, you editing software, where do you see the future going? Do you think more people are going to follow your lead and do a similar thing?
It's really hard to say because, you know, trends kind of have a mind of their own. It is very easy to get your iPhone out and take some video. I don't think we're quite there yet in terms of something that's, you know, of a high production value. And I do find these days a lot of people are sort of tipping towards the Instagrams, and I think there are editing programs that make it all kind of simple, and you touch a button and you everything's got a filter on it and it looks great. So I think that kind of takes the creativity out of it, which I'm, you know, I mean, people can do that, but for me, I like to sort of keep it, you know, back to basics and you know the rules before you break them.
Excellent. Yeah. Thank you very much. Really appreciate having you on again. We'll love to have you back in the future when you've got your next steps organised. Please let us know.
Yeah, no worries.
Because I know that our listeners, we've had some great feedback today, and we'd love to talk about your next steps as you go through your career. That's fascinating. Roger, thank you very much for taking the time.
No worries. Thank you for having me on the show again.
You're
it was
very
great
welcome.
To see you again, Mark.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.